This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the headline here from this morning on Pro Football Talk, given the source, because it's Mike writing it, not one of his team of writers, I think is worth noting. Steelers fans should embrace Aaron Rodgers. Now, Florio writing from the position of the guy of being the guy who said yesterday that Rodgers to the Steelers is a matter of when and not if. So at the risk of saying Aaron Rodgers to the Steelers is at the goal line here and putting the cart before the horse, Mike is putting it out there that Steelers fans should be excited about this. I'm just going to read directly from the article because I think his framing is worth hearing. He says, with momentum building towards quarterback Aaron Rodgers joining the Steelers, plenty of Steelers fans aren't happy about the expected development. To those fans, we say this. Seriously? The Steelers have had no consistently successful player at the most important position in the game since Ben Roethlisberger's retirement. Rodgers would instantly upgrade the position dramatically. He would position them to make the playoffs and to win when they get there for the first time since the 2016 season. It's that simple. Rodgers makes the Steelers better, and Rodgers is the best option they have for 2025. He goes on. Rodgers took a heel turn in 21. He relitigates stale controversies. He can be exhausting. He can be insufferable. But he's still a very good quarterback, so don't hate it, Steelers fans. Embrace it. Come January, you'll be glad you did. That's a mouthful, considering the source. That would be like me standing up and pounding the table for like the all-time most impassioned defense of Ben Roethlisberger, first ballot Hall of Famer. Or what else? I'm trying to think of other nemeses that I've had throughout the years. It would be like me urging a district judge if Adrian in Pittsburgh was being called forth for like a misdemeanor or was, you know, was at a some sort of trial, me coming up as a character witness and saying, this man, Adrian, deserves your respect and deserves to be let free. He should not go to jail. Cats laying with dogs, that kind of thing. All due respect to Mike, who I like a lot, and who, frankly, I might say this to on Wednesday when we have him on, because with Mike, we can take the gloves off and get a little punchy in a good-natured way. I disagree. So the fundamental thrust here is where he says he would position them to make the playoffs and to win when they get there for the first time since 2016. Isn't that a little presumptuous to say about a guy whose stats were, I would say, pedestrian at best last year, whose best games came well after the Jets were eliminated from playoff contention, and who would have to deal with the rugged AFC North, to say nothing of the rugged AFC at large? Putting aside the whole anybody can get hurt at any time and it can upset the apple cart, Joe Burrow can get hurt and suddenly the Bengals don't matter, Lamar Jackson with the Ravens, basically anybody. Here is the list of teams you definitively, I think, would have to climb over in terms of perception. Just quarterback perception. We'll forgive for a minute the notion that the Bengals don't have a defense and don't know what they're going to do. They're clearly going to try to win every game 50-49, which I respect. Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson in your own division, two of the three best, I think, in the entire league. At worst, two of the five best, if you want to get technical. Don't worry, though. Two of the other five best are also in the AFC, bare minimum. Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. That's four. Then you have a lengthy list of guys who are just pretty good and might end up being great. Justin Herbert, pretty good quarterback, might end up being great. Everybody thinks Jim Harbaugh is going to cause them to take another step forward. I don't think Tua's awesome, but the Dolphins on any given day when they're at home are a tough out if he's healthy. So you look at him. CJ Stroud, probably going to have a bounce back year, if I had to guess. They still made the playoffs and won a game with him. It's not like they were chopped liver. He had a sophomore slump and they were still competitive. Trevor Lawrence, real GM there now. No more Trent Baalke. I think there's the thought that Liam Cohen, who helped resuscitate Baker Mayfield's career, is going to do the exact same thing for Trevor Lawrence, help get him finally on some sort of accurate track. There is the chance that Cam Ward ends up in Tennessee. Probably the only guy I would say has a real shot to be a franchise passer in this year's draft. So what did I just name there? Seven?
So here's another one
I forgot Bo Nix, too. Also a playoff quarterback in his rookie year.
This one is borderline, but still, you got to think of where Rodgers is, you know, age-wise.
Okay.
Not even the Raiders have a complete pushover quarterback now. They got Geno Smith.
You're right.
So like
NFC West has like a competitive player at the position, the entire division. So that's one whole division. That's two of the other three teams in the Steelers. That's six. Josh Allen makes seven. He's one of the alpha dogs. CJ, you don't even get to Stroud. And this is not to say because I think
you say Drake May.
No, I didn't even say him. And he's probably the guy I'm the most bullish on of that rookie crop. Yeah, I forgot him. Good job, Chris. So, I mean, you start to take stock of this. They'll have old buddy Justin Fields, too, with the Jets. I think he's proven he can win some games, at least for the Steelers he could. I'm not going to pretend that all, what did I name, eight guys, nine guys, I'm not going to pretend every one of them is going to be great. The difference here is, though, Don, and everybody out there, most of those guys have been good enough for long enough where you can, barring injury, assume that they will be very good. I think you can put Mahomes, you can put Jackson, Burrow, Allen. I don't think like Herbert necessarily deserves this level of credit. I also don't think he deserves to get slagged. You can put him in there. That's at least five. Probably Stroud, too. That's six. You've got real track records here. You're not just asking like guys to make a big leap to make this a rugged conference. And so when you say, like, yeah, he's positioning them to get to the playoffs and then to win, that means walking through somebody pretty damn good, chances are. And probably on the road because you're going to win your own division. As long as the Ravens are there and Jackson looks like he does, I think it's going to be a tall order. Oh, and by the way, they have a pretty hard schedule, do the Steelers. On paper, at least. I understand, I think, the temptation to look at Rodgers' best, then to say that he was with the Jets, a joke of a franchise. I know we complain about the Steelers and how stubborn they are and how obstinate they are. I guess that's kind of the same word twice, whatever. Obstinance hour coming up at 10 o'clock tonight on Donnie's show. Not abstinence hour, though. That's different. And we look at the Steelers and we get frustrated. I acknowledge readily the Jets are way worse and way more dysfunctional. But Aaron Rodgers, the player that he is now, is he a force multiplier? Not really. I think he's a guy that if the situation... There are two kinds of quarterbacks that I think can win in the NFL. I think you have the ultimate force multipliers at the position. I named a bunch of them. I think the majority of them are in the AFC. I actually think Stafford is more the true guy like that in the NFC. I don't know if Jalen Hurts is. I think he's like a weird combination of has some really high-level skills and is also in the best situation of anybody. So you either have the force multiplier quarterbacks or you have the guys who can also succeed because everything around them is in the right position, is structured just so. The coaching, the roster, etc. Jordan Love sort of exists in the bubble between them. Hurts does too. Hurts obviously had huge success, so I get it. It can work at the highest level. Jared Goff is a situational dependent guy. If he's indoors, if he's in that offense, he's going to sling it. He's going to be very tough to stop. If you had to put Rodgers in one of those two buckets moving forward, you'd absolutely put him in the right situation he can still be productive camp. That's the one he'd fall into. He's no longer a force multiplier. I think if he had his mobility, he still could be. But like anybody that's in their late 30s to early 40s, or that's, I guess, now in their early 40s, you might remember what you were like at 37 and say, that feels like an eon ago, but that ain't me anymore. His arm's still lively. I think the mental side of the game is still very strong there. I do think that he sees and processes things at an exceptionally high level. I think that he is somebody that you can trust to generally make the right decision. He's not going to put the ball at risk because he got fooled very often. But the secret sauce for him was the ability to do all of the things we're talking about him doing outside the pocket, off of structure. Aaron Rodgers was good to very good because the arm was great and because the mind was great. Aaron Rodgers became exceptional because when he got out on the move, you didn't know if he would decide he was going to run for 12 yards and hurt you that way or deliver like a rifle shot 30 yards down the field and make a throw that essentially nobody else in the NFL can make. He still probably has the best highlight reel of top 10 throws of any quarterback of the last 25 years. Unless you want to, like, if you want to put Favre in there, maybe, for just raw arm strength and precision. He made a throw against the Cowboys that I think about, like, every time we come up with what are the best throws you've ever seen. Rolling the wrong way, throwing semi-cross-bodied to a window that was the size of a loaf of bread and putting the ball exactly where it needed to be. He was capable of absurdity. He was. But that happened on the run. It doesn't happen like that anymore. He gets the pocket collapsing in on him. It's a sack, Don. Do you buy the Florio thing, though, that I do not buy? This idea that get Aaron Rodgers and start getting happy because he's a difference maker? Because that's essentially the argument.
I can buy the point that he's the best they've had since Big Ben, but I mean, what kind of bar is that setting?
Well, you're saying that if he's that, he's better than Mason Rudolph those last three games. Which, do you want to know the sad part? They haven't had anyone play three games in succession better than Rudolph played.
Yeah, like, that sample size is just so small, but I mean, I get what you're saying.
That, I mean, also accounting for the fact that one of those games was played in a monsoon and they deliberately did not ask him to do much, and then when they did, he actually did hit the one throw he had to hit. But they haven't had somebody. I could go look at his passer rating. I think it was like 118 or something for those three games. But that's the bar you're putting at. Can he be better than what you think Mason Rudolph would have leveled out to be if he had played a whole season? Yes, I think that's
true. Yeah, that's where I'm saying
where does
that
Rodgers
would
you?
Be.
Where does that slot you in the NFL hierarchy?
Well, that's a huge question with all of this. Like, how much better does this truly make them? Because I feel like it puts their floor at the usual 9-8, and it puts their ceiling at, I don't know, maybe 11-6, but then that doesn't guarantee you a playoff win. They could very well go into the playoffs and still lose. It could be a home game and they could still lose. It's not like Aaron Rodgers has been a phenomenal playoff quarterback in the last couple of tries. I'm not saying he never has been, and I'm not saying that his defense hasn't failed him in other attempts, but you think of at least recent playoff games with Aaron Rodgers, he hasn't been...
No, he's actually
an untouchable quarterback.
Well, no, the problem with him in recent playoff games is that, like, that other thing that made him so great for so long, like a willingness to make every throw. I mean, what he did to the Steelers in the Super Bowl was just dumbfounding. Stop watching TV, Donnie. Both, like, watching FS1 right now cover this exact same story, wondering, like, trying to read lips to figure out what they're saying. The thing that made him so special in the playoffs, he lost. Or he, like, willfully kind of tamped down, which was a willingness to take risks. I think he's only as good as his willingness to take risks and his mobility. Yes, the arm is still there, but it's a big part, but it's only one part of a larger version of the player that used to be an MVP, but I think will never come close to regaining that form.